5 o'clock. This is Overdrive. The boys are off, prepping, charging the machines for the hockey season, which is getting closer and closer. Kristen Shilton will join us in a couple of minutes, and we'll get some hockey talk in. That's Dave Festchuk. I'm Mike Hogan. We'll keep you company until 7 o'clock this evening, and I guess we can get into it with Kristen a little bit about her thoughts on Sidney Crosby turning 30. A big day.
It certainly is. It's just hard to believe. I mean, he was Sid the kid. Now he's, you know, he's Sid the senior. I mean, in hockey term. In hockey terminology, really. I mean, this is such a young league now. You know, how many 30 somethings are there that are super effective and highly paid in this league? I mean, teams would rather cut these guys loose and find younger talent all the time. Now, obviously, Sidney Crosby, he's probably going to be allowed to play as long as he'd like in this league, and who knows how long he will play. But and he might not be, you know, he might be at his, you know, his points per game peak was a younger age, but in terms of his overall game and his impact in the moment, I don't think he's ever been bigger. I think he's the front runner to win the Lou Marsh Trophy as Canada's Athlete of the Year, given the 12 months he's just gone through. Winning back-to-back Stanley Cups and on down the line of winning the goal-scoring title and all that he's done. But then again, 30's 30 in a league where it's young is the thing.
But, you know, it depends on the player as well and how long he wants to play.
Yeah.
You know, Wayne Gretzky probably had some gas left in the tank at the end of his career. And, you know, when we start talking about Crosby, we have to go to a different stratosphere to talk about players. And Gretzky's last year, he had 62 points. So he had 90 points the year before. But, you know, the 62 points in 70 games wasn't what Gretzky wanted.
No. And there's
which speaks volumes right
and
there.
And we've had this discussion so many times about how much hockey is too much hockey for Sidney Crosby, given his head injury history and the number of knocks he's taken. And, you know, we want Sidney Crosby to live to a ripe old age. And we've seen a lot of hockey from Sidney Crosby. And I wouldn't be sad if he retired tomorrow. I mean, I'm not suggesting he does, but I think if he feels that he's had enough, he should definitely consider it. It's not happening, though. I think we all know Sidney Crosby is a guy who appears maybe more than anybody we've ever come across in this league to live for the game and to love the game so much that it's hard to imagine him voluntarily stepping away anytime soon.
These aspects of his game will both be heavily included in his legacy. But will we think of Sidney Crosby more for the club team success, winning Stanley Cups with Pittsburgh, or will we think more about the international success, the World Cup championship? You can, you know, put into that whatever you think of the tournament, but
beating the ancient rivals from Team Europe.
Well, you know,
how
can
we forget?
But still,
you could have got in there for $30 on StubHub, Hoagie. I mean, I don't think we're going to think about the 2016 World Cup of Hockey.
But I'm just talking about the full measure of how well he played internationally.
No, I know. Look, I'm being a bit facetious. I mean,
sure.
He was great in that tournament this past September, and he was great in every Olympics he's played in. As much as it's always been the eternal Canadian argument, the eternal Canadian debate, who's the best line mate for him, because it never really was an obvious answer, which is one of the great, interesting, you know, sidebars to Sidney Crosby's career, is that it's always been tough to find him line mates, even at the international level. But I do think it's obviously, you take it all in sum. And the fact that you can't be considered one of the greats if you don't star for Team Canada and you don't win a Stanley Cup. I mean, if you've got one of those two things missing from your resume, you're just not in the conversation.
But he's checked every box, right? Conn Smythe, Hart. Like, he's checked all of those boxes.
And this year he decided, hey, I'm going to check the box of Rocket Richard Trophy winner and beat that Ovechkin dude in goal scoring, which everybody seems to think I couldn't do, and he did. So, mind you, I think he probably could have done it more often if he so chose in the past. The fact that it took him 44 goals this year to get it. A bit of a down year in goal scoring when it comes to the league, but still did it. 44 goals in 75 regular season games. Awfully impressive, you know, given all the mileage on that odometer.
Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline is Leaf correspondent, as it were, Kristen Shilton. How are you doing, Kristen?
I'm good, thanks. How you doing?
Good. What did you get Sidney Crosby for his 30th?
You know, I sent him a gift. I haven't heard anything back, though, so maybe he didn't get it yet, but I wouldn't hate to spoil the surprise for him.
Why don't we talk about, we were talking about Crosby and his contributions to the sport. When I mention the name Sidney Crosby, what's the first image that comes to mind?
Probably when the Penguins won the first cup that he was there. I think it was his second year in the league, just the picture of him hoisting it. I think is always that image that when I think of Crosby, just the look on his face and that whole, the build up to that after they came so close the year before, I think that's how I always sort of picture him.
So, Kristen, you were down in Michigan watching the World Junior Summer Showcase a few days back. What did you see from the Leafs' young draft pick, Timothy Liljegren?
You know, Liljegren is a player that I think he looks at a guy like Erik Karlsson, and I think he would really like to model his game after Karlsson. We in the media have sort of asked him about that comparison. And so now when I saw him playing in these tournament games, it seemed like maybe he was trying a little bit too hard on the offensive side and less on the defensive side of the puck, but I still thought that he had a good showing. You can see that his skill set just stands out, even though it is among his kids, among kids for sure, but his skill set and the way that he's able to move the puck, you know, the way he's able to skate with the puck is something that just really stands out to me. And the strides that he made here at development camp, you know, he talked to me about wanting to, you know, there was a list of things he wanted to do better when he's skating, you know, wants to rely less on his crossover so he's more fluid, especially when he's moving backwards. I could see that he was still trying to implement that. I could see that process for him of trying to, you know, put those tips that he had gotten and actually apply them to his game. But I do think he was trying a little bit too hard to be offensively effective instead of focusing on the D zone. But that's a pretty common thing for a kid his age when you have these ideas maybe in your head about the type of player you're trying to emulate. Sometimes that can go a little bit too far, but I thought he calmed down a little bit there towards the end.
What kind of mistakes was it? You mentioned he was maybe trying a bit too hard on the offensive mm-hmm. side. What kind of mistakes did that lead to?
Well, you know, if you're trying to make too many plays, especially when you're coming out of the zone, it can lead to, you know, maybe you're making some inadvisable passes. Maybe you're missing the little plays in favor of trying to make that game-breaking or that playmaking pass. And I saw that a few times where it was just too much. It was, you know, it would have been easier to just make the quick outlet pass and then move the play forward. But instead, you know, if you're trying to move the puck out of the zone instead of making that first pass, or if you think you see an opportunity, you know, where you can create a goal scoring chance for yourself instead of maybe making that pass, or even just, you know, just little things like that where, you know, you want to, as a defenseman, I think if you want to be too much in the play, sometimes you can be making those little mistakes and then you can get caught trying to get back to the D zone, which I saw happen with him a couple of times where either maybe he had lost his man or he wasn't in position where he needed to be, and that created an opportunity for the other team. But, you know, I saw a lot of that dissipate as the tournament went on, and I thought his last couple of games were much better defensively. He was making, you know, he was doing what he does well, which is obviously he's such an elite skater and he has great vision and he can make those passes. You know, when he makes just the simple plays, I think it's always, you know, it shows better and reflects better on him. But definitely those last couple of periods I thought were some of his best.
So, Kristen, your eyes were on that Swedish defenseman, Liljegren, the Leafs draft pick. A lot of people had their eyes on another Swedish defenseman at the World Juniors Summer Showcase, and that, of course, Rasmus Dahlin, a guy who's expected to be the number one or one of the top picks in the 2018 NHL draft. What did you see from Rasmus?
Well, he's such a good player, and you can see why he gets the attention that he does. And I think, you know, just the sense you get from him is that he's a very calm player. You know, he sees the ice well. Obviously, he has an elite skill set, you know, much like Liljegren does. But he just seems to really just feel out a play, and he's able to know exactly what the optimal, you know, whether it's a pass, whether it's, you know, bringing the puck out of the zone himself, whatever it is, he just seems to have a great presence already for such a young player. And I think that stood out to me whenever he was on the ice, is just he has, you know, he has that ability to, whether it's, you know, seeing the ice well or whether it's, you know, using his playmaking skills, he's very calm. He's very focused, but he almost in almost like a veteran way where he just seems to have a great awareness out there. And he's one of those players that I think can bring out the best in those around him as well. And, you know, you always, I say again, like it is, of course, kids among kids and you're comparing them that way. But I think what stood out to me about what stood out to me about Rasmus throughout the entire tournament was just the calm, you know, when he's doing what he does best. I think he can absolutely be a force, and he's going to be a great prospect for, you know, for you. We'll be talking about him over the next couple of years. And when he does get into the league, I think the fact that he already has that poise is going to really help that transition for him.
Kristen Shulton joining us here on Overdrive on TSN 1050. Lily Ugrin wasn't the only Leaf prospect at the camp. Which others were you able to get a look at firsthand?
Joseph Wall and Emilian Rasinen for Finland and the U.S., they were both there as well. Wall is someone that I think the Leaf fan base especially is very excited about because of the difficulties the Leafs have had in terms of drafting goalie prospects, keeping them in the system, and then eventually seeing them play with the team. You look through even their last 10, 15 years, and I mean, Garrett Sparks is still there. Of course, James Reimer was, you know, the guy for a couple of seasons. Now he's gone. Antoine Bebo wasn't qualified as an RFA. Now he's gone as well. And Wall is I think, a really top goalie prospect. With the season that he had as a freshman at Boston College, the strides that he made as a starter, as a freshman, as an 18-year-old, it's quite an accomplishment for him. And I thought at the showcase, I didn't think his, you know, I thought his last game wasn't his best, but I really liked as a whole, his whole body of work, what he was able to do. I think is, you know, just shows the efficiency that has sort of developed in his game. I thought at development camp last year, he was a little bit too eager, a little bit too aggressive at times, but he's certainly, I think, found a lot more confidence in his game in the crease. And you could see that in the showcase when he's, and even it really started to, for me at least, I really started to see that most when he was at World Juniors, World Juniors last year. Only played a couple of games for the U.S., but I thought that was a big tournament for him, even just being around all of that and the opportunity for him, and now seeing it translate into these types of tournaments. You really see how he's come a long way, and he stands out among his peers, which is what you always hope for. You know, with a prospect for a team, you want him to be a guy who's standing out to you. And then Rasinen, you know, he's a longer way off, certainly, than some of the other prospects that the Leafs have. He's a bit more raw. He's tall. He's like 6'6". He's a big guy. And with those big players, they've got to learn sort of how to harness all of that, you know, their size and their abilities. And he's got a good shot. He's got a lot going for him, but he's just got to harness all of those physical gifts he has. And once he does that, I think, you know, he'll be a lot more effective, especially, you know, out of the D zone through the neutral zone.
Yeah, I mean, 6'6", 6'7" guys at 18 years old, as you say, Kristen, it's tough tough to bring it all on the ice at that age, at that height. But do you see any parallels in players that are established in his game at all?
You know, nothing really springs to mind immediately. I think it's just that what I know the Leafs liked about him, what Hunter and his team really liked about, is that he has that skill set. He's a big guy, but he can play a skill game as well. And they're really interested in making their back end prospects more, having like a higher skill level than maybe in the past. And when you can get the skill and the size together, you know, it's definitely an upside. It's why they took Rasmussen as high as they did. And he coming through the system, you know, I think it was Doug Gilmore said, there was a quote from him about how, you know, guys just bounce off him. Like when you try to hit him, you're just going to bounce right off. So he has, you know, to compare him yet, I don't know that I've seen enough of him to really say, like, this is a guy that I could see him definitely looking like in a few years down the road, wherever he ends up playing. But what I like about him is just that he's very focused on improvement. I think he really sees a lot like Liljegren, actually, and the two of them are good friends from what they told us at development camp. But I think Rasmussen's very eager to learn, and I think he wants to get better. And that to me is always, you know, it's a very Leaf type character thing that they like, is they want guys who want to learn, who want to get better, who will take what their coaches tell them and actually apply it. And that's a, you know, he's a guy to me who's just very interested in, you know, bettering his game and to really take it to the next level as quickly as he can.
Kristen, a pleasure. Thank you so much. And I hope you hear back from Sydney.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, guys.
Kristen Shulton joining us, our TSN Maple Leafs reporter. And Kristen joined us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days are on now with 0% financing and lease rates on the Toyota Corolla and RAV4. Visit MapleToyota.ca. It's funny with the Leaf draft picks now. You almost have this innate confidence that they've done the right thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you went back to the Brian Burke era and heard the name Tyler Biggs, you almost expected it to fail.
Well, with Biggs, I mean, that was the classic moment in the Biggs saga, the not-so-dramatic saga of Tyler Biggs, was the moment they drafted this big guy who was really physical, and then they dropped on the world that we're going to make him a goal scorer.
Yeah.
Like, he hasn't scored a lot of goals to this point in his life, but we're going to make him a goal scorer.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you think that went, Hoagie?
Not well.
Yeah, because, you know, because don't we all know guys who just decided, you know what, today I'm going to start scoring goals. Like, as though there's all these forwards out there who've been saying to themselves, yeah, I could score, but I don't feel like it.
But isn't it when you hear the scouts, they say that goal scorers aren't coached, they're developed or they're made or whichever cliche you want to run in, that you have to have some sort of innate, natural goal scoring ability or you're never going to learn it.
Right. That was my understanding.
Yeah.
And yet the Leafs decided, oh, we'll just draft big guys and turn them into goal scorers in the Brian Burke era. Genius plan.
Isn't it funny, though, like at all levels, and you can go back to Adam Hockey and see this, and right up to the NHL, where two guys will show up, and it looks like they're exactly the same. They've got the same skating ability, roughly the same body type, and then maybe the guy who doesn't score as many goals has a better shot. But for whatever reason, the guy who might not be able to do other things so well just has a knack of being able to get the puck off his stick and somehow it finds the net, whereas the guy who might be the better shooter at times or might break the most pie plates in a contest wouldn't be able to score to save his life when the lights are on.
Well, it's funny because, you know, Wendell, I remember talking to Wendell Clark the night Austin Matthews broke Wendell Clark's rookie scoring record this past season.
Mm-hmm.
And Wendell was saying that about Matthews, is that, it's, you know, with him, when he scores a goal, it's not about just the hard shot. It's not always bar down, top shelf.
Yeah.
It's like, I just overpowered you, a la Ovechkin. Like, Matthews just seems to find little holes. Mm-hmm. If it's on the backhand, if it happens to be a little, it's just a little shot. It doesn't have to be a hard shot. Sometimes it is a hard shot. Sometimes it's a beautiful shot. You know, he finds a way to get it into the available space, right? And that's the skill. It's, yeah, a hard shot's nice. A hard shot can make you a good goal scorer, but it's not necessarily the only way to do it. And I think maybe not the best way to do it, especially when, you know, the leagues turn into, you know, so much traffic in front of the net. The goalies are so good on the first one. You got to be able to improvise.
But it's funny how times have changed. And I mean, think of our own Dave Poulin. What a spectacular defensive player he was.
Right.
And at times the assignment was, okay, see that really good guy out there? Follow him, and just whenever he's on, you make sure that you can switch with the other winger and get your rear end out there and follow him, or center, whoever he was marking on any given night.
Yeah.
And now, when we're talking about Crosby, so why not go there again? How many times does Crosby score from the weak side with nobody near him?
Yes.
How does that happen so much? And it's those guys who are able to find the open ice and score. He should never be afforded that kind of open ice. Here, Matthews should never be afforded that kind of open ice. McDavid creates a lot of it on his own with that speed. He's a completely different duck. Go back a generation. Brett Hull, you'd never see him. And then all of a sudden, he's got 5 by 5 feet of open ice around him. And you'd think, when a guy's scoring 90 goals a year, that he at some point might be checked man-to-man.
Well, it's like, you know, Mike Babcock talked about that multiple times this year with a lot of his talented rookies. I think it stands out with Mitch Marner talking about how with Marner a few times. Babcock talked about how, hey, most of us who play this game, we have no room in this league.
Mm-hmm.
But with Marner, whenever he gets the puck, he seems to have all kinds of room. And why is that, right? And what's the ability to create space for yourself, or, as you point out, to create space, you know, away from the puck? It's a great skill. It's an incredible skill, and it's an instinct. And I'm not sure it's one you can necessarily teach very easily, right? You can probably improve it a little bit, but guys like Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews that have incredible, I think it comes with incredible puck skills, the idea that everybody knows that you know, he can make you look bad when he's got the puck on his stick, and if you don't give him a little bit of space, you know, he can go around you in a way that's going to make you look bad, right? So there's that, but there's also just something about pacing and finding yourself in the right moment in the right play that these guys seem to have, and that's very difficult to describe and articulate and certainly coach, but nice thing to have on your roster.
The other thing that amazes me about, you mentioned Marner, is how slight he is. I mean, not just the fact that he's not 6'4", but the fact that he weighs, 175 pounds, whatever he is at this stage. Very slight body. And he might not even weigh that much. But in this era where defensemen aren't getting any smaller and where rinks aren't getting any bigger, you would think it'd be even tougher for a guy like that to create space. And yet he's still able to do it. There are more, I guess, diminutive players in the league, but there are also a hell of a lot more big players. And it's just, you would think at some point, and I hope it never happens because he's so much fun to watch, at some point somebody's going to catch him. But he always gets rid of the puck so damn quickly.
Yeah, we just don't see, you haven't seen it yet. I mean, mm-hmm. people have been saying, like, this is a funny one because you talk about, I remember talking to people in Mitch Marner's camp, whether it's his agent or his dad, or I mean, people have been saying this about this guy since he started playing hockey at age 6.
And right, we said it about Marty St. Louis, and he played 20 years.
Like it's the idea that someone's going to suddenly hit this guy. It's been out there a long time, right? Mm-hmm. And it just hasn't happened yet. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say, look, everybody can get tagged. We saw Nylander get tagged at the World Junior a couple of years ago in a way that, makes you go, wow, and worry about his long-term health. It can happen. But I do think, isn't there something to be said, Hoagie, for if your skill is awareness and your skill is quickness and your skill is sort of this sixth sense of knowing where you are on the ice. Mm-hmm. And I think Mitch Marner has those skills in spades, over the rest of his peers. At least the average peer and Mitch Marner are separated by a lot in those skills. That's his edge, right?
But it's one thing to do that with the London Knights. It's another thing to do that in the NHL, where everybody's bigger, stronger, faster.
Well, they are, but so are you. He's pretty quick.
He's faster, but he's not bigger, stronger.
But you know what? We've been through that era where guys were 6'4", 240, the Lindroses of the world, mm-hmm. and it's changed because the speed is the essence now. Like you can't be that tank anymore. You can't put on that bodybuilding kind of mass in your upper body that guys used to do in another generation. My point is, how big do you have to be? Like Mitch Marner, he's not a big guy, but he's apparently pound for pound a very strong guy in the weight room. Mm-hmm. We have heard that about him, and I think it's really about how well do you move. It's not how big is your body.
Well, just after watching so much bad, boring hockey here in Toronto for so many years, I just hope the kid plays forever and they're able to keep him and Matthews and Nylander, because whether you're a Leaf fan or not, that was a fun team to watch last year.
Well, that's just it. Like, I mean, you and I don't think you're a Leaf fan, are you?
No.
No, I'm not a Leaf fan, but I'm a fan of
good hockey.
Great talent showing itself in any sport, and to see these young kids come in and do something we've never seen in Toronto, or certainly we haven't seen a Calder winner in multiple generations. We haven't seen anybody that's got MVP type talent in forever since in this town. That's been the big characteristics that separated the Leafs from the Stanley Cup winning teams in the past 50 years, is they haven't had the great players in the league.
When did you start on a hockey beat and general reporting columnist beat?
Well, off and on. I started in the mid 90s.
Okay.
I started writing.
So in the last 20 years, be honest, how many times have you watched a Leaf game because you had to, not because you wanted to?
Oh, many.
Exactly. I'm in the same boat.
Yes.
This year, I watched the Leafs because I enjoyed watching the Leafs, as opposed to, damn, I got to talk about them for 3 hours the next day. My God, it was fun to watch those kids play hockey.
Yeah, it's a joy to watch. It's a lot of fun to follow, and you can just feel the energy in the city. Like, I grew up, I shouldn't say I grew up, but this past decade, being involved in youth sports, coaching at the low end, there was that generation of Leaf of Toronto kids that played hockey, loved hockey, but didn't like the Leafs, right? Mm-hmm. and because they didn't have a jersey they could buy, they didn't have a player they could warm
but
up.
But they loved Joe Sakic, and they were Colorado Avalanche fans, or they loved the Capitals.
They were Ovechkin guys, but they weren't going to become Dion Phaneuf guys. Maybe some of them did. I'm not saying there was no Dion Phaneuf jerseys around town, but I'll tell you what: if you want to count up the number of Dion Phaneuf jerseys sold in Dion Phaneuf's run as captain of the team, you'd have to believe Austin Matthews jerseys outsold him in a single season. You know, last year alone, because they were just flying off the shelves. They were everywhere in the stadium, and there's a good reason for that. You know, and it's an obvious reason, but it's a long awaited reason.
Up next, if he's not the best player in the world, he's knocking on Mr. Crosby's door. And how did Connor McDavid at age 9 help develop his skills? We'll talk to one of the guys behind that next as we continue with Overdrive here on TSN 1050. This is Overdrive. Mike Hogan and Dave Festchuk in for the lads today. We've got baseball talk at the top of the hour as Dirk Hayhurst will drop by. We'll talk about the Blue Jays and their weekend in Texas. First up, though, you mentioned you're doing some coaching, and in the summer especially, it is pretty easy to find a hockey conditioning or skills refiner, as it were, as far as camps go. But what separates one from another? To talk about the industry in general, his company specifically, because they worked with a young kid who turned out to be Connor McDavid, so that works. From Power Edge Pro Hockey Training, Joe Quinn's on the line. Joe, thanks for joining us.
Well, my pleasure, Mike. Thanks for having me on the call today.
How intense is the competition between what your company does and, as I mentioned, between hockey schools and so many kids playing hockey, your competitors? Like, how cutthroat is it right now?
Well, I think we're pretty unique what we do. I don't think we really compete with what other, you know, companies are doing. I think what we do, you know, the reactive countering training is pretty much one of the best predictors of small area game performance. So, you know, with our patented gear and all the different techniques that we have and the concept, really, it's there's lots of power skating, lots of different trainings out there, but we're pretty unique to what we do here.
What makes you unique?
Well, you know, it's pretty much a progressive training system, so we're pretty much overloading the motor skills, and we're syncing the hands and the feet and the head together. A lot of players are training in isolated training environments where you're just focused on the feet or you're just focused on the hands. So when we add the resistance of the gear, you know, and the training concepts, it really pushes the player, you know, Mike, they've got to really push to execute, react, and counter tactics. They've got to move the puck through small open lanes. We have two lanes on the gear that we have that's all patented, 17 inches off the back, 42. So, but we're doing this all at full speed with different circuits on, you know, small area, around the ice, full ice, half ice. So that with multiple training circuits, that you've got limited space, you've got added degrees of difficulty. You know, we can add forecheck pressure. You can add give and go puck movement to simulate the game transfer. So it's all about the repetitions. When you take these and the repetitions of players, they're going to gain the reactive countering, agility, you know, needed to evade opponent, whether attacking or whether trying to place the opponents even on the defensive side as well when they're defending.
So, Joe, when you've got Connor McDavid in a camp, I mean, we look at him and we see, you know, the best the sport has to offer. How do you try and make him better?
Well, you know, he's been training since he's 11 years old, so he's a pretty unique player and obviously the best player in the world. But, you know, they're having fun when they train. Connor, it's obviously a repetition for him. He's gained repetitions over the years. Unlike a lot of the players that are coming to us now that are stars in the NHL, we've got to work on their motor skills. But, you know, he's still the same. He's still trying to increase his, you know, response time. He wants faster decision times. He wants quicker movement speed. And to get that, it's the repetitions through the high-speed, high-traffic circuits. So, you know, it doesn't matter how, you know, skilled you are. You're never too skilled that you don't keep on wanting to work on increasing your skills.
Well, I mean, Tiger Woods or Rory McIlroy or whoever you think the best golfer in the world is at any given point still have a swing coach, right? They still have to work on the repetition.
Well, exactly. If you look at the game today, let's face it, it's changed. You can't impede a player's, you know, way if he doesn't have the puck. And you see a lot of the players that come to me now that are some of the stars in the game, they're trying to carry the puck past defenders. And if you look at Connor's game, obviously he's got the lowest stride to crossover ratio in the game. He attacks at full speed. He attacks his own. You know, his crossovers are pretty much his best deception skills and his false information. So he's moving pucks past defenders, putting them in a vulnerable position. But because his feet are exploding at the same time, you know, he's got multiple motor skills. He's an elite multitasker, where a lot of the players haven't acquired that skill set. So it's tougher for them to gain the zone. But again, that still comes back to repetitions. You still need to get the repetitions. And when you're in this kind of environment, it's, you know, I know a lot of the players will say that when they go to the game, they feel that they have more space when they start, you know, when they're in the game because of this small space and lack of space here.
So, Joe, you talk about, you know, stride to crossover ratio. I mean, are you actually calculating such things?
Well, there's a study that was done, I think, a little while ago. It was on your show, I think, in TSN. I think some of the information, I think Frank Saravalli had put it out there that I think most of the NHL players cross over every 12 to 14 strides. I think the top 25 cross over every, I think, 4 strides. And if you look at Connor's stride, he's probably 1 to 2. There's all kinds of video. There's times he'll go up base 100 feet. He doesn't have anything but crossovers. And that's why, you know, he's so tough to stop. He's so deceptive. He's cutting left, right at 35, 40 kilometers an hour. So what we've tried to do in our training is really limit the space. You know, this was basically my warm up with him and many of the players every day, is just to limit the space with our gear. The gear is 6 feet long with the open lanes. You set these up down the ice 100 feet. The key is to take the space away. Keep challenging the players. And when we take the space away, it limits the stride and forces the player to have that crossover. So, you know, some of the younger players might start with 8 to 10 feet, but now, you know, the elite players, they're training with maybe 3 to 4 feet. So they don't have any time to generate a stride. It's almost crossover, boom, you're getting ready to crossover again. But again, we're still back to overloading the motor skills, move the puck. You have to have a major undercut to get over, outside shoulder. So, again, there's multitasking going on, but I believe for sure 100% that today's game, you know, a D-man's not going to have any trouble. It doesn't matter how fast you are. If you're a straight-line skater, you're not going to be able to cut it as a top 6 forward. You've got to have those deceptive skills, and it's all coming down to the power, the I call it a reactive linear crossover.
Joe Quinn joining us from Power Edge Pro Hockey Training. How much of this can be taught? How much of this is something that's just an innate skill that somebody is born with? And I guess as a follow-up, if it is something that's taught, at what age do you have to get somebody before it's maybe too late and they just can't rebound from bad skills?
Well, it's a good question. You know, a lot of these players that have already developed their nervous systems, the older players, you know, you take a player that's 8 years old and they haven't developed those bad habits, you can work with them, they're flexible, and, you know, you can develop the motor skills with them. But it's tougher, no doubt it's tougher with the older players that have, you know, they've got, they're set in their ways, they've got some, I call them maybe some bad habits. It takes longer. I've worked with some of the top pros in the game, and it's a couple of years every summer to finally get them where I want them to be with their skills. But there's no question. I mean, Connor started 11 years old. And we've got players all across Canada, younger players now that are, you know, elite level. I mean, out in the Western Hockey, I think the last 4 or 5 years, the first and second picker are PEP players, PEP trained players. But again, you know, they've started at 10 years old, 8 years old. It's not a learn to skate program, but, you know, once you get past that, you definitely want to have the puck in your stick. You want to be training, reactive countering. The puck has to be on your stick in training in that kind of an environment. But there's no doubt about it. There's a great book that you can pick up. It's called The Talent Code by Daniel Coyle. Phenomenal book. It talks about myelin and, you know, how it's wrapped around the nervous system. And you can't develop that without deep practice and lots of multitasking. So that's another story. But no doubt you want to get the kids on this when they're younger. There's no question about it.
Like, yeah, that's interesting. You talk about the value of, you know, deliberate practice, Joe. I mean, how much of McDavid's genius is just him being born with an incredible genetic gift, and how much of it do you think is just his diligence as a kid who loved to practice?
Well, you know, I think one of the guys commented the other day coming over to the pro camp we had last week. One of the guys was going to pick him up, and they couldn't find him, and he was in the garage on his roller skates training, you know, and with the doors closed, probably 40 degrees Celsius in there. So I think that sums up Connor's commitment and dedication. I know when I trained him every day, you know, sometimes I'll take a little break to give the players a little break, and he's the one pushing me to get going again. So very dedicated, very all business. And there's some other guys like that, that, you know, like John Tavares is like that, all business-like. They want to train. And there's no question, I think there's a combination, major gift that he has. But he's, you know, he's worked hard to get where he is. You know, he's put the time in. And like I said, those repetitions, he's gained hundreds of thousands of reactive repetitions and reactive counting repetitions over the years. When he had the year in Erie, you know, they trained, I think, 2 to 3 times a week there for, you know, the 5 years, 4 or 5 years they had the gear. So he's put the time in both, you know, it wasn't just to come on the ice and put the reps in. I remember, you know, years ago when he was trying to saucer the puck over and he would hit the apparatus in the gear. Well, that just drove him to do thousands more reps. And, you know, he's a product of his environment. He's really worked hard. And even today, you know, last week he wants to go hard. There's only one way to practice. He plays the way he practices, no doubt about it.
Joe, a pleasure. Thank you so much for doing this. Get a plug in for your company once again and for the website.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for having me on the call. It's www.poweredgepro.com, reactive countering. Rethink your training.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Continued success, Joe. That's Joe Quinn joining us from Power Edge Pro Hockey Training. If you're putting out this list, and this is on the website, some of the players that they have worked with, Connor McDavid, John Tavares, Matt Duchene, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Nathan MacKinnon, and some kid in Toronto named Morgan Riley.
Yeah.
And this, I'm just kind of pecking my way through. Like, there's a couple of dozen players here. Ray Ferraro's kid Landon, one of my favorite players in the league, Boone Jenner, have all gone through this, so...
Yeah, Joe makes a lot of great points. I mean, it's about skill development at a young age, ideally. But it's interesting to hear him talk about how he's got NHL guys coming in there whose motor skills aren't up to par with what he'd like to see for the elite level. I guess it's never too old to learn, but it's tougher to learn as you get older.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I asked the question: at what point is too late?
I don't think it's ever too late. I mean,
well,
I think
you can you know what it's like with muscle memory and just a comfort level. There are a lot of athletes who are probably elite as 13-year-olds that in this system probably aren't doing something correctly, where you can still get your hands on the kid, but you know, that's maybe already too late by hockey years.
I mean, obviously if you're at the NHL level, you've got some kind of talent that's keeping you in the league, right?
So, but you're refining something.
But it's
you're
the guys. That's what I'm saying. But yeah. It's the guys with the growth mindset. The guys who say, "Hey, I got to try and get better at this stuff, even though this isn't my thing yet." Right? I mean, like you admire, you know, different sport, but you admire DeMar DeRozan for spending this summer, by many accounts, working on his 3-point shot, a huge point of weakness
every
in his
year.
Game. But a guy who's made all the money you could make in the NBA with an incredible contract that's guaranteed and yet still driven to go out there and try and improve this weakness. Well, you know, it sounds to me like, you know, Joe's seeing guys at the NHL level doing the exact same thing with their skating and stick handling and both in conjunction.
It's funny where you get the two camps, though, where you get the families that think it's let me rephrase this. If a kid has NHL aspirations,
yeah,
there is the camp that says, okay, they've got to be doing hockey as their only sport, and they've got to be doing it all year round. And then you hear some of the great players in the game say, no, I needed the break. I needed to get away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And the game is evolving or devolving, whichever way you want to look at it, intensity needed to get to that next level. Obviously, the product on the ice is being helped, but for kids, you know, how much is too much? I understand the passion that some of these kids have for the sport, but at some point, you not let them be kids and not only be able to do something like this, but go out and play baseball or tennis or golf or something else, for God's sakes, and go and be a kid. Have some fun.
Well, it's funny. I remember asking Austin Matthews about his upbringing as a player and how often he was on the ice with his coach. He had a coach down in Scottsdale, or I guess in, you know, the Phoenix area, named Boris Dorchenko, a really great skating coach, hockey coach in general. And Dorchenko and him worked, by Austin's account, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
He was on the ice 7 days a week for much of his childhood. So it doesn't happen by accident.
No.
Hockey.
Oh, God,
it doesn't
happen
by accident.
Not at all. Among other things, in the next hour, Dirk Hayhurst will join us to talk some Blue Jays baseball. Along with Dave Festchuk, I'm Mike Hogan. This is Overdrive on TSN 1050. Five. 9:49, creeping up on 6 o'clock. It's Overdrive. Hogan and Festchuk in for the lads. We have Dirk Hayhurst joining us at the top of the hour. How are you watching the rest of this Jays season? Because they're done.
This is tough to watch, isn't it? I mean, I find it excruciating to watch a team in a state like this, where they're, you know, you're not tanking, you're not in it, you're not rebuilding, you're not contending anytime soon.
And you're not committing, well, they're committing intend to contend or whatever the catchphrase is.
I mean, I think they're, and I would say, until I can be proven otherwise, I would suggest to you that this whole idea that they're going to try to contend in 2018 by tweaking this roster that currently sits as the oldest roster in Major League Baseball
is insane.
It's insane. It's delusional. Yeah. It's essentially fooling your fans. And what it is, it's making off with the money while your fans continue to fill the dome by the lake for another summer as you currently lead the American League in attendance. It's being addicted to the money that's pouring into that building to the detriment of long-term planning and to the detriment of actual vision and understanding where this team is in its life cycle and what needs to really happen, which I think we all agree is they need to blow it up and replenish the farm system beyond two guys in Vladdy Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette.
Who are not necessarily going to be sure things anyways. How many times have we seen blue chip prospects that just don't cut it?
Nobody is a sure thing. And these at 18 and 19, you're not a sure thing.
You hope.
You have to prove you can hit Major League pitching eventually. Whether or not they can, like, all signs point to them being able to right now, but that's as they sit in high A, three levels removed from the major leagues. And a lot can happen as you mature as an adult and mature as an athlete and mature as a millionaire. You know, all those things, you don't know how guys are going to react to all the stuff that happens to guys as they move up through the levels.
But this intend to contend next year, you hope Smoke is able to do this year what he did, or next year what he did this year.
Right.
There's no guarantee that's going
to
happen.
It's a one-off to this point.
You don't know who the second baseman's going to be next year. You kind of know what you're getting in a depreciating asset that costs way too much money at shortstop. Will Donaldson be healthy next year, or is this going to be something that just lingers and lingers and lingers?
What?
Is he snake bit? I don't know who your corner outfielders are. You're insane if you bring Bautista back.
No kidding.
Your center fielder is not a great offensive player. Russell Martin's another year older, so you're going to have to get a catcher who can catch more games than you've expected out of your backup. And, ladies and gentlemen, who's your starting rotation next year?
Well,
Stroman, you got
three fifths.
Happ and maybe Sanchez if the blister goes
away.
You
have to believe Sanchez.
I would hope so.
Sanchez will find a decent manicurist and get his fingernails figured out. But look, you can. It reminds me of those teams in the 90s where you could stack up a bunch of ifs. If Stroman, Sanchez, Happ, and the other two guys who remain unknown turn out to be a really good rotation. And right now, you can plausibly say they got three-fifths of a really good rotation. No, there's no question.
Yep.
So if you want to be positive about that, be positive about that. And then it's if they can find two corner outfielders in free agency that are passable. Who want to come here. Okay. Let's say they could. And then if Josh Donaldson isn't falling off a cliff because he plays like a wild demon out on the field and is getting into his 30s, maybe he'll have a bounce back year. Maybe he'll be
an MVP. Could be spectacular.
Maybe he could be. And, let's be positive. Let's say he is. And maybe Justin Smoke has found something. He's unlocked the mystery of how to hit a baseball finally after all these years. And this incredible year he's having, this all-star season he's having, it isn't just a one-off. It's just who he is now. He's an all-star caliber talent at first base. If all those ifs...
That's a lot of ifs, though.
...stack up, then you can say, now we're contenders, and great. Congratulations, you're contenders. But there's a lot of ifs there that can go the other way pretty quickly.
Yeah, and essentially for me, it's almost at every position.
Yeah.
And
well,
I mean major question marks.
Well, and you got a major problem. Like, is there a more important infield position than shortstop? And you got Troy Tulowitzki there making $20 million, not only being an absolute black hole at the plate, but turning into less and less of an asset on the defensive side of the ball.
Great hands, but losing some range.
Big time loss of range as he's getting into his 30s. Devin Travis, again, can be a really great asset to you at second base.
But?
But
you can't count on
the injury history can't be ignored because it continues to repeat itself.
I just there are just way too many questions, and you know maybe they are for the most part answered in the affirmative, but that's asking an awful lot. And you know the Red Sox are set long term. The Yankees are set long term. Those are the teams in your division that you're trying to catch.
And that's to me why this is the moment where you say, "Hey, let's do the Theo Epstein rebuild, where you lose 100 games." You get a top handful pick. You get a top three pick, ideally a number one pick. And you get a Chris Bryant-type player that becomes a linchpin to a team that you can really be proud of going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't they do that? Well, we all know why they're not going to do that next year. Because
give you 40,000 reasons.
Exactly. 40,000 reasons every night. Pull through those turnstiles. And that's an easy thing to get addicted to. And I'm not saying, hey, if the money was going into my bank account, I might see the virtues of just staying the course too.
We'll have Dirk Hayhurst join us in the next segment, and he's going to drop by and talk about the present, the future. But we'll get into the specifics of Osuna and his loss of velocity of late, and how problematic that can be, and how much can you afford to lose when you throw that hard to begin with. That's all coming up, along with Dave Festchuk. My name is Mike Hogan, and you are listening to Overdrive right here on TSN 1050.